Welcome to the Totem Figures Podcast. I'm TJ Daw. John Showman is a Toronto-based full-time performing fiddle player, active in a variety of bands. The Creaking Tree String Quartet plays instrumental music. Skraling plays Irish music. The Foggy Hogtown Boys plays bluegrass. And New Country Rehab plays a mix of reconfigured classic country songs, old-time fiddle music, and original compositions. John also trained extensively playing classical music. In our interview, he talks about what got him playing fiddle in the first place and the various musicians and teachers he met and played with along the way. We started off talking about the music of Jesse Zubot. But first, here's a track from John Showman's self-titled solo album.
What strikes me so odd is he's such an enigma, because when you meet him, he's kind of, you don't exactly know where he's coming from, but I mean, to my mind anyway, he explores all this seriously, what I would consider avant-garde music. I mean, I'm kind of a simpleton. I play fiddle tunes and, you know, like songs with kind of, you know, simple structures, I guess.
But he does that too. You know, the Zubot and Dawson stuff is all really accessible.
Yeah, totally.
Really simple and melodic and instantly appealing.
Avenues they took was to kind of make the music be sort of a nebulous thing in terms of the genre and the definition. I saw Zubot and Dawson play at Ted's Wrecking Yard in Toronto like 10 years ago. That's where I first saw them. That's where Jesse kind of blew my mind. Yeah, I kind of put the fear of God in me. I just couldn't believe how anybody could improvise like that on fiddle. Just, I'd never seen it. I'd never thought to do it.
What were you playing like before you saw that?
Well, I was kind of trying to get my head around playing bluegrass, and I was learning as many licks as I could and trying to assimilate, you know, a more southern style of fiddle playing and trying to distance myself from my tendencies and my classical tendencies.
Who were the southern bluegrass influences?
Kenny Baker, Bobby Hicks. Vassar Clemens, when I first started out, he's the most accessible of all those guys.
Thank you.
love playing so much. I quit classical violin. Like, I was really good at it. I went to Indiana University. I started playing when I was six.
Indiana University?
Yeah.
Why there?
No, that was the best classical violin school in anywhere.
Really?
Yeah. So ranked like top three in the world.
Where are you from originally?
Ottawa.
Okay. And what got you playing fiddle at six?
My grandfather played. He taught himself. I remember going to music school in, well, grade one, first day of school, or first music class, and everybody went into the room. There were all these instruments lying about, and I just happened to wind up the violin. That was good, like right away.
Which is unusual. You know, it's considered one of the hardest
instruments. The music teacher called my mom and said he had never heard anybody play fiddle like that after just picking up.
Because usually it can sound awful if somebody doesn't know what they're doing. And they just
I remember when I was like 2 years later, I'd been taking lessons for a while, and it was some contest, one of those Kiwanis things. I remember coming in second place, and it irked me.
At age eight?
Yeah. So my parents moved to France, so I studied there with another teacher for 2 years.
Why did they move to France?
My dad worked in the government. He had different jobs. Because my dad loved languages. My dad speaks like six languages. So we did that as a family. It was nice.
You liked it there?
Oh, I loved it. It was great. So when I came back, I had this teacher. I found this teacher at the National Arts Center Orchestra called Vic Palmer. That guy was a great teacher, and I was with him for 5 years, basically all my teenage years.
And what specific things did you learn from him?
He taught me that playing violin can be broken down into tiny little, easy-to-learn technical units that build on each other like little Lego bricks until you have these big structures of technique where you can play Paganini caprices and shit like that. He's kind of a crusty dude, which made me think he was cool, and he was kind of tough. You know, he's a nice dude, nice old guy. And
music teachers are famous for being kind of crusty.
Yeah, he's great. But he made me feel like it was cool to play fiddle, even though none of my friends thought it was. I knew he was cool, and so he made me feel like it was cool. But he made me practice. Like, he basically took my mom aside and said, if he's not practicing, this is when I was 11, he said, if he's not practicing an hour and a half a day, I don't want to see him. And my mom made me practice, too.
And was that hard? Did you resist?
Yeah, of course I did. But I did. Yeah, I remember trying to tape myself on a machine once. I was trying to tape myself so I could play it back and go out and play with my friends. My mom would think I was crazy. It took me 45 minutes to record a half-hour lesson. And then by the end of it, I think the machine got stuck and the tape got stuck in the machine. My mom's like, you haven't really been practicing for the last half hour. You've just been messing around with that machine. So then it all came to nothing. So that was kind of the beginning and the end of my cheating, I suppose. Good. He said I should go to Indiana, which was, in his opinion, the best music school in the world. I had the most famous violin teacher then living, whose name was Joseph Gingle, and he was a really famous teacher. I never actually studied with him, but I had some pretty hard teachers there. They were good. They kind of took the technical stuff I had from Vic Palmer, and then just kind of, you know, took it in outer space, but not in a very nice way. Like, they were kind of like, it was like a machine there, you know. I just totally lost interest. So I just quit, and I got a degree in business from McGill, and then came home to Canada. And I didn't touch it. I gave it up for dead. I didn't play for 4 years.
4 years?
Yeah. Wow. And then when I came back to it, I realized, like, I still had all this technique, but I didn't have any of the hang-ups. I didn't hate it. And I could improvise easily. Like, I found improvising easy.
Was that the kind of thing you were taught, or was it the kind of thing
No.
you steered away from?
Neither.
Really?
Like, Vic never taught me to never steered me away from anything. He was just, like, he taught me like a machine. But I don't know, I somehow managed to forget all the hang-ups and all the fear and all the tightness in my arms and in my back that I was starting to get at music school. And I could still play really well. And, you know, I maybe forgot 5% of what I knew, the top 5%, but I could still get everything else. And so there wasn't anything really that I couldn't play. And I could improvise. Like, there was nothing I couldn't catch by ear and play. Like, it was easy. And, you know, I think bluegrass was just something that other musicians were playing that was an excuse for me to go out and have fun and play. Like, it could have been anything.
But it's not a tremendously popular style of music.
Yeah, that's true, but there's a bit of a scene around it. Like, there's always a little scene, and there's always kind of interesting characters in the scene who are really into it.
But it's a small scene.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a scene you're likely to stumble into.
No. No, you gotta... I mean, the only reason I could get in is because there wasn't anything I couldn't play. And even though I didn't really know the style, like, people could put music in front of me and tell me to play it, and just, I'd play it, you know, perfectly the first time. I still sound classical, so I spent years trying to, like, figure out the subtleties and the nuance and the sound, you know, so I could sound like a country player, not like a classical player. So I feel like I've been spending like half of my adult life just disguising shit that I know, which is fine. I wouldn't really have anything like that.
So you're in Montreal, you're playing bluegrass, and what was the next step after that?
Well, the next step after that is I heard Irish music for the first time. I was right around the same time I started playing bluegrass, and it just blew my mind. I'd never fucking heard Irish fiddle playing. I'd played violin for, you know, 13 years. I'd put 10,000 hours into practicing violin at that point. I'd never heard an Irish fiddle playing.
So I
had this recording of Kevin Burke. Some guy gave it to me and said, hey, you should learn these tunes. And it blew me away. I was like, holy shit, I can't believe a fiddle sounds like that. It blew my mind. I couldn't believe that anyone could make a violin sound that way. I just had so much groove and rhythm that I was kind of like, just kind of instantly obsessed. It's kind of like watching Jesse Zubach. It's like this moment where it's like, you know, I haven't listened to that much Kevin Burke since, although probably I actually have, but it was just like a moment in time where it's kind of like something kind of, some light went on, and I was like, oh shit, that's what a fiddle sounds like. So to me, it's kind of like I always sort of associate Irish music and bluegrass music as being really similar. And I don't think I'm totally off base, because most of that, all the fiddle stuff came to North America by way of Scotland and Ireland.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of the same shit. It's just that the style and the way it's played is obviously different. I always look for similarities in kind of the rhythms, the choice of notes, that kind of stuff.
So did you go about learning some of these Irish fiddle tunes?
I did. I jumped into it. I instead of getting a job in business, I called some guys who I knew who needed a fiddle player, and they gave me a job working in an Irish band. I played that band for 5 years. I played probably 1,100 or 1,200 pub gigs in that time.
Doing what kind of tunes?
Oh, popular, like Irish pop music. When I say Irish pop music, I mean like, you know, traditional drinking songs and the medleys of fiddle tunes. The banjo player was really good. He was really into fiddle tunes. So I got introduced to this whole world of kind of Irish tunes and bluegrass tunes all at the same time. And I got to play them too. And I worked my ass off for that band. I would drive 3 hours to Kingston, set up a 1970s sound, piece of sound equipment, play 3 1-hour sets and drive home, get home at 5 in the morning, and I'd make like $50. And I'd do that like literally every Friday and Saturday night, because we never stayed over there because they didn't pay us enough, so we couldn't afford a hotel room. So we'd drive there and back. Did that all the time.
So what kept you going, you know, if they were paying you so little?
Well, I mean, I lived in Montreal, man. My rent was $250.
Right. But still, that's a lot of driving. That's a lot of effort. Like, yeah, was the plane itself enough to...
I just wanted to be a musician. I just wanted to be a professional. Like, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. So it was like, and I enjoyed every minute of it. Like, it was kind of crazy and a little intense, but...
Even though you'd stuck it out for 4 years of a business degree.
Yeah.
Like, what was the moment where you just thought, business is just not for me?
I had on a suit. I had 20 different resumes, each one tailored specifically to a different bank branch. I was going to try to get an entry level as a clerk. I just looked at myself in the mirror, I looked at the resumes, I looked at my suit, and I said, I can't do this, man, there's no way. And then within 5 minutes, I called those guys and said, look, I'll do anything to work with you guys. And I said, hey, you know, as luck would have it, we're just recording this Gypsy album. We need a fiddle player to come in and do some stuff, and we have a couple of gigs. And I just jumped in and tried to learn as much as I could, as quickly as I could. I got embarrassed a few times.
What do you mean by Gypsy album?
The mandolin player, he's really into all these old Gypsy tunes he played on mandolin. And he knew that I could play that stuff, because the whole classical Gypsy thing, like the Brahms, Hungarian dances and all that stuff, like I had great vibrato and like good tone, good, so I could really play that stuff quite beautifully, you know? And then he just taught me all the Gypsy stuff, all the Irish stuff and bluegrass stuff and, you know, pop stuff.
At what point did you move to Toronto?
once I got sick of Montreal, that band kind of imploded a little bit, and so I decided I needed to change the scenes, and I just wasn't happy. So I came to Toronto, and I played music with a guy here called Mike Rossiter, who gave me a ton of gigs when I first came to town. So.
Is there generally a demand for fiddle players in the music scene? I mean,
yeah,
but like the world of music is probably lousy with guitar players.
Yeah, but the thing is that there's a lot of fiddle because people like strings. Strings always kind of go in a cycle, but there's always music. Like country music used to be all about strings. Now it's not so much. Now actually, country music is about guitars and pop music is more about strings, which is kind of a funny turn of events.
Where do you hear strings and pop music?
Cave Fire. Social scene. Feist. You know, there's tons of strings. Tons. Everywhere. Owen Pallett. He's the first guy I've seen create music from scratch using loop pedals, where the music was about the music and not about the loop pedal. Plays violin, he has a little Casio, looks like a little Casio keyboard, and a ton of looping pedals, and he writes music, like really good music. The guy's an artist, he's great.
But at the same time, you play a massive range of styles of music. Is there a favorite that you have, or is there
I'm strongest at bluegrass and country. Something sort of sad about it, and it's slow enough that you can kind of really hear the subtleties in all the notes. It's very happy and sad sounding at the same time. It can go any way. It can go nasty, it can go pretty, it can go kind of, you know, resplendent, it can go dark, it can go lots of ways.
Tell me about your wife.
I met her when she started taking some fiddle lessons from me, but she quit pretty quickly because she didn't like what I was teaching her. And to be honest, I wasn't a great teacher back then. This was like 4 years ago. And she gave me a book for my birthday, right after she stopped taking lessons from me. I guess probably to show me some hard feelings. But I didn't really think much about it. And then 3 months later, I read the book, and I really liked the book.
What was it?
It's called Rats.
Is it a novel?
No, it's a very interesting book. It's a very, very good read. It reads almost like a novel. It's about a guy who becomes obsessed with rats in New York City, and he follows them as an anthropologist would, or as a biologist would. But in the course of it, he ends up uncovering all this sort of underground history of New York, like the history of the booze cans and the early subway. You know, he follows rats in the subway, and then starts talking about how the subway was built, and the people who built the subway, and people who financed it, like, you know, hundreds of years ago. Really interesting shit. So I thought, oh, this is cool. And so I asked her on a date, and, you know.
After 3 months?
I hadn't seen her in 3 months.
What was it about that book that made you think there might be something there?
Well, because I thought it was a really clever book, and I really liked it. And I didn't know if I kind of would identify with her on an intellectual level, and then I married her.
So how long have you been together?
This is our fourth year.
Do you ever play together?
Yeah, we jam together all the time. She loves old-time fiddle. She kind of turned me on to it. Like Appalachian-style fiddle. As opposed to bluegrass, kind of one of the precursors of bluegrass.
So with all these different styles that have come and contributed to the long and twisted journey of your musical career, what do you think might happen next?
I've decided that I kind of want to eventually do an album. Like I did it for my first solo album last year. when I wrote all these fiddle tunes. And I like it. I think it's a nice album. But it's very all over the map. And I kind of set out to, for it to be that way. Just like, had so many different influences. But I'm trying to zero in on kind of what I am most predisposed towards playing. And I think it's kind of old Southern stuff. So I want to do an album eventually. You know, it doesn't have to happen for 10 years. I don't care. But eventually, I just want to do an album where I'm writing all these kind of Southern style old airs and stuff like that. I mean, they're original melodies, but they sound totally like they're, you know, 60 years old, for whatever that's worth. I mean, I don't know how much of a market there is for it, but I know other fiddle players are looking at it. I mean, people always find it a little nostalgic. It makes people, kind of slows people down a little, which isn't always a bad thing.
Somewhere in the night, she's running for the border with an agate cameo that's hidden deep inside her pack. Imagining the days when another made her own run through the mountains to the border with an army at her back. And these lives form a line. These ties are stronger than time. Buried deep in her mind, she met him in a camp, right beside the border. But so many years have passed, now there's just a cameo.
For more information on John Showman's music and gig schedule, go to johnshowman.com. For a complete list of the artists and tracks used in this podcast, go to the John Showman page at totemfigures.com. I'm TJ Daw, and this has been a Totem Figures podcast.
And the days drift on by, a lazy sun through the sky, reconnect by and by, and these moments to find what you hold in your mind and your perception of time. Perception of time moves painfully slowly when you're not quite home and you know where to go. Ghost and cameo. She's lying at the border. He never made it to the phone, so they had to let her go. Free from tyranny, their lies just across the border. Gently holds a cameo. Now the two of them are home. And these lives for a line, the ties are strong with the time. You've got to make up your mind, find a reason why. And these moments to find what you hold in your mind, your perception of time. Your perception of time moves painfully slowly when you're not quite home and you know where to go.